and so no one would know how tired they've grown of talking and telling their lies. All we've got, no health insurance, no cellular service, no disease they can cure. More money to burn, so each person must learn the dollar amount they are worth. And those pills make me.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science. A leading authority on the politics of healthcare and healthcare reform, he's the author of The Political Life of Medicare and co-editor of the 13-volume series, The Social Medicine Reader, the second edition. He is currently working on a book project on the politics of health reform. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Oberlander.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And before Vice Presidential nominee Paul Ryan was booed last week at an AARP meeting down in New Orleans, apparently Mitt Romney was already losing voters amongst the elderly voting group, a key electoral group. I take it your feeling is that if he loses the older vote, he loses the election.
That's right. There's no way that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan can lose the senior vote and still win the election. If you look at what happened in 2008, seniors were one demographic group that John McCain actually did quite well among. And for Mitt Romney to put together a winning coalition, he's got to have a majority of seniors.
So what explains then the fact that he had a 20-point lead over Barack Obama amongst the seniors, and now he's down to less than a 4-point lead?
Well, the polls are bouncing around a bit, and part of it, of course, has to do with a general bounce in the polls for President Obama following the Democratic convention. But I think it's also the case that this election in terms of health care has been a surprising one in that it's focused on Medicare. And Medicare is an issue where Republicans have a particular vulnerability, especially with Paul Ryan as their vice presidential nominee, and Democrats have been, at least to this point recently, winning the Medicare war.
So how did Mitt Romney do on 60 Minutes? That's a huge venue. And again, the questions of Medicare came up. What seemed to be pretty clear was that he made a strong point of saying that he's in charge of the ticket, not Paul Ryan, and therefore it's his vision of Medicare that counts. And then he went on to say that he would have a two-tiered Medicare system. The existing one would be choice A, and a voucher system would be choice B.
Yeah, you know, he's got a political problem, which is that for much of the country, Paul Ryan's Medicare plan is not very popular. And there was a New York Times poll just in the last couple weeks that asked Americans, would you like to keep Medicare as it is now or turn it into what Paul Ryan envisions, a program where people would get a defined contribution from the government? And over 75% of respondents said they wanted to keep it as it is now. Medicare is a very popular program. So Romney is trying to thread the needle and distance himself from Paul Ryan. And one of the reasons I think that you don't hear a lot of specifics on Medicare reform is it's difficult for him to get in that Medicare arena and give specifics of a plan, because if he does, he does one of two things. One, he alienates the conservatives who very much view Paul Ryan as a fiscal warrior and as a hero, or two, he alienates independents who aren't going to like the changes in Medicare. So he's got himself in a bit of a box.
Well, when he was asked about taking care of the needy in this country and the uninsured, Romney, this is on 60 Minutes, of course, which many analysts saw as a kind of a, you know, a rehearsal, if you will, for the upcoming debates on October the 3rd, in as much as 60 Minutes had both Romney and Obama on their program last Sunday. So his response, though, to the question about the uninsured was, well, you know, if you have a heart attack, you know, you can still get medical care. They, you know, they don't, you just don't have to, you know, die locked away in a room somewhere, referring to emergency medicine, which is what the interviewer followed up with, which was, wait a minute, aren't you just saying that everybody can go to the emergency, and isn't that incredibly expensive and cumbersome and not a particularly good use of our resources? So there we have it. I mean, that seems to be the headline, that there's always the ER.
Well, that was a really striking comment, and I think it proves the old adage that you can't outrun your own shadow. Here we have a presidential candidate who has a right to claim credit for healthcare reform in Massachusetts, who played a big role in advancing healthcare reform in Massachusetts that has really expanded access to health insurance in that state. And one of the major arguments that Mitt Romney made back in 2006 about the Massachusetts health plan is that we had all these uninsured folks showing up to the emergency room, and people with insurance were having to pay for their care, so it made more sense to mandate them to buy coverage. And Mitt Romney, in the 60 Minutes interview, essentially is walking back a position that he has long held, which is it's better to insure people. And he's echoing what George W. Bush said a few years ago when asked about universal health care in the United States, that we already have it. And it's true that by law, emergency rooms have to screen and stabilize Americans. It's the one place you can go where they have to see you. On the other hand, that care is not free. Hospitals certainly try and charge you for it. And we also know that the emergency room is in no way an adequate substitute for universal insurance. We know that on average, the uninsured in the United States get about 40% less medical care. We know that they have a higher mortality rate. And so, for example, uninsured women with breast cancer die at a higher rate than women with health insurance. So to say that the emergency room is a substitute for universal health insurance, it really bespeaks a level of insensitivity, and also is simply inconsistent with what Governor Romney has said in the past.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science, and he's the author of The Political Life of Medicare. So the other point, I think, is pretty clear about the emergency room as a last resort or a first resort for healthcare, is that by the time you get there, preventative medicine, which is infinitely cheaper than treatment, that opportunity has been lost. I mean, give us a sense. I've always been puzzled, Jonathan, about why the Obama administration have not solved their health care plan and reform, and they've allowed it to be sort of stigmatized as Obamacare. And apparently a lot of the provisions that, when people know about them and start experiencing them, they like them, but they've done an appallingly bad job. And do you think that they've done a job as somebody that's involved in social medicine of pointing out this obvious fact that if you have preventative medicine with screenings and clinics that are much, much more low cost than treatment that happens later after the person's developed, a chronic disease?
It is certainly the case that if you take people with high blood pressure or diabetics or kids who have asthma, it would be much better for the healthcare system to see them earlier and to get them into good primary care rather than emergency room care. It's also true that it costs money to cover the uninsured. We have almost 50 million Americans who don't have any health insurance, and it does cost money. And I think you're right, health reformers and the Obama administration have not been successful in selling the Affordable Care Act. And one of the major problems I think they've had is trying to explain what's in it for people with insurance. Because if we think about the uninsured, they're disproportionately low income. They don't vote at very high rates. And most Americans have health insurance. And so the case that the administration has to make in this election and that reformers have to make beyond the election is what's in the Affordable Care Act that helps people who already have insurance. And the Affordable Care Act is really complicated to understand, but I think one simple way to understand it is that the law makes coverage more affordable and accessible for those who don't have it and more secure for those who do. And it's that latter point that reformers really need to sell.
So what do you think happened to Mitt Romney then, Jonathan Oberlander, in as much as he came up with the Massachusetts health plan that in many ways became a model for so-called Obamacare, and now he's running away from it when, in fact, as you pointed out, one of the ways that he sold it to the voters of Massachusetts was how expensive emergency care is and how we can prevent all this by pooling into a statewide program. I'm just puzzled about this because even more recently, when he was in Israel, he praised the Israeli health care system at keeping medical costs down to 7 to 8% of GDP. As you know, our healthcare costs are upwards of, what, 18% of GDP on a $2.8 trillion healthcare system that doesn't take care of at least 50 million of our fellow citizens. So what's happening with him? Is there two Mitt Romneys here, the private and the public?
I think what's happened is the Republican Party has moved to the right. I mean, to be fair, Massachusetts is a very different kind of state. And if you're in Massachusetts or in California, where Republican Governor Schwarzenegger was also a moderate on health care reform, it's a very different situation than in many other parts of the country, including where I live here in North Carolina. And Mitt Romney was running in a primary election in the Republican Party, which has moved significantly to the right in the last few years, and where health care is an absolutely toxic issue, and anything that looks like Obamacare is a death knell of the Republican candidate. So he had to distance himself in that primary, had to distance himself, in effect, from his own plan. And the dilemma that he has is, having done that, at the same time, he's got to try to appeal to moderates and independents who may not like all that's in the Affordable Care Act, but many of them don't want to see it completely repealed. So just as with the Medicare debate, he's got himself in a very difficult box.
So how does he think, as he said on 60 Minutes, that private plans will have to offer the same benefits as traditional Medicare? But he provided no details. I mean, is that possible?
Well,
I mean, one you pay for Medicare, and one, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, the strange thing about this Medicare debate is we already have private plans in Medicare. He and Congressman Ryan have said that their plan would offer more options. And I'm not sure quite what they're talking about, because right now in Medicare, beneficiaries can choose from the traditional Medicare program operated by the federal government, or what's called a Medicare Advantage plan, which is a private insurance plan that contracts with the government. And one out of four Medicare beneficiaries or so actually choose those private plans. So we already have private plans in Medicare. We already have choice in Medicare. It turns out those private plans are overpaid by the federal government, and so they're actually adding to the budget deficit. But regardless, we already have that level of choice. So in a way, I think this argument that we need choice in Medicare, that we need private plans in Medicare, is really misleading, because what is the basis of Congressman Ryan's plan is not the addition of choice, but shifting the burden of rising medical care costs to seniors and other Medicare beneficiaries. That's the issue, is who should bear the cost for Medicare reform. And the Obama administration tries to cut payments, low down payments to the medical care industry. Congressman Ryan's plans would alternatively shift the cost of rising care to beneficiaries themselves.
So that's at the heart of this demagoguing that's been going on against so-called Obamacare, saying he's taking money out of Medicare. Well, that's the money that they're talking about, is it's overpayment from Medicare Advantage, is it not?
Yes, that's certainly part of it. They slowed down the rate of increase in payments to hospitals as well. And we should be clear about two things. One is that under the Affordable Care Act, Medicare is still going to grow. Before the Affordable Care Act, it was projected the program was going to grow at about a rate, annual rate of 6.8% a year. After the Affordable Care Act, it's going to grow projected 5.5%. So it's still growing, just not quite as accelerated a pace as it was before the health reform law. The second thing is that controlling Medicare spending and slowing it down is good for Medicare beneficiaries. We know that the Affordable Care Act enhances their benefits and, for example, fills in that infamous donut hole in prescription drug coverage. But as your listeners who are Medicare beneficiaries will surely know, Medicare has a lot of holes, a lot of cost sharing, high deductibles for hospital care, a lot of copayments for physician care. And the higher that overall Medicare spending is, the higher those copayments are. So if we were actually to repeal the Affordable Care Act, as Governor Romney wants to, it would actually add substantially to the cost of seniors and other Medicare beneficiaries.
So again, Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science, and he's the author of The Political Life of Medicare. Let's just change somewhat to the broader issue of how so-called Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is being implemented around the states. It's a lot of people have noticed that the governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, who has been who has been a vocal opponent of the Affordable Care Act and a stinging critic of President Obama's health care law, particularly when the Supreme Court upheld it. She called the ruling an overreaching and unaffordable assault on states' rights and individual liberties. Yet we've learned that she is quietly designing an insurance exchange. So, and this is happening throughout the country. So I guess the reality of health care is overwhelming the rhetoric against it.
I think that's right. The fact is that exchanges, which are simply online marketplaces, sort of organized or regulated shopping malls to buy private health insurance, where the uninsured and small businesses would go to buy insurance in a state, think of something like Priceline or Expedia.com, except for health insurance. Exchanges were originally an idea that had very broad Republican support. And the major reason that Republicans have opposed them is simply that they're attached to the Affordable Care Act, and anything that is attached to the Affordable Care Act becomes a source of partisan strife. But there are certainly a number of Republican states and Republican governors that are looking very closely at this idea, and the reason they are is this. If they do not set up their own exchange, by law, the federal government will come in and do it for them. So on the one hand, many of these conservative state leaders are torn because they don't want to participate in Obamacare. They want to boycott anything having to do with the law. On the other hand, they know that if they don't do it, the federal government is going to do it for them, and they would rather do it themselves. So I think if President Obama wins re-election and if the law moves forward, you'll probably see a handful of states that resist and don't implement their own exchange, but many other states, including states led by Republican governors and legislatures, will come to accept the reality of the law, at least in the short term, and implement exchanges.
So, Jonathan Oberlander, what would happen if Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan were elected? What would happen to, I mean, he said he's been emphatic that he wants to repeal Obamacare. What kind of a landscape would we have?
Well, it will certainly be a very different one. He has said that on day one he would move to repeal it. Now, it's not going to be quite that fast, but if Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan win, and if, for the sake of argument, we assume that he will have a Republican majority in the Senate and a Republican majority in the House, there's no question that they can overturn large parts of the law. They probably will not have 60 votes in the Senate, so they won't have enough votes to overcome a filibuster, but they can use a process called budget reconciliation, where you only need a simple majority. And in fact, this is what Democrats used at the very end of the debate in 2010 to pass the final version of their law. Republicans can use reconciliation, and they can't get rid of the whole law because of some of the regulations governing that process, but they can get rid of the major parts of the Affordable Care Act. And we should all keep in mind that most of the parts of the Affordable Care Act that affect access, the Medicaid expansion, the subsidies for the uninsured to buy private coverage, the exchanges, aren't scheduled to go online until 2014. And it's a lot easier to get rid of something before it starts than after people are already enjoying the benefits.
But will that mean then, if Romney and Ryan get in, that they will be able to institute this voucher plan of Ryan's, whether it's Romney's version of Ryan or Ryan's version of the voucher plan?
Right. Good question. I don't think we know the answer to that. How many difficult issues do they want to take on at once? They'll certainly move to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Whether they want to invite a huge fight over Medicare restructuring, I don't know. They certainly can pass that kind of legislation in the House. Whether they would be able to get it through the Senate, we'll all have to wait and see. But we should also not forget about Medicaid. And really, if you look at Paul Ryan's plan, most of the savings in the first two decades are not from Medicare. They're from the Medicaid program for low-income Americans. And that program, of course, is comprised predominantly of pregnant women and children and parents of children, as well as seniors and persons with disabilities. And Paul Ryan's proposed budget would absolutely devastate Medicaid. It would cut it as a share of the national economy by 75%. And so while everybody is paying attention to the Medicare debate, mainly because seniors vote, let's not forget about what is at stake here for Medicaid.
Well, just in closing, Jonathan Oberlander, what's your sense then of how this is going to translate in the closing stretches of the presidential campaign as a central argument. It seems to be picking up steam, and it would seem to be, if the polls are right, if Romney's losing amongst the seniors and he's gone from 20 points ahead down to 4 points ahead, I suspect the Obama people see this as a winning argument.
Absolutely. I'm a political scientist, and our forecasts are not known for being particularly accurate, so I won't make any forecasts. But I will tell you there's no question that you're going to see more attacks by the Obama administration and by Democrats on the Medicare issue. It is an effective issue. It is a wedge issue for them. And I think what will be really interesting to watch is, do we see any ads around the Affordable Care Act? Medicare's taken up a lot of space. Do we see anything on the Affordable Care Act? Do we even see the president come out and try and claim credit for some of the more popular provisions of the Affordable Care Act? That'll be very interesting to watch in these last 6 weeks.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Jonathan Oberlander.
I appreciate you having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science. A leading authority on the politics of healthcare and healthcare reform, he's the author of The Political Life of Medicare and co-editor of the three-volume series, The Social Medicine Reader, second edition. He is currently working on a book project on the politics of healthcare reform. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the author of Future Perfect, The Case for Progress in a Networked Age.
We don't care.